Welcome to my Latinx life. Join me as I journey to learn, educate, and highlight Latinx leaders in a comfortable setting similar to your mom's kitchen. We'll explore a variety of topics with guest and reoccurring hosts. I'm your host, Joe Redondo, and this is my Latinx life. Okay, welcome back to my Latinx life. This week we have another amazing guest joining us today on my Latinx life, Mr. Salvador Segura. He is joining us and he works for Microsoft here in the Pacific Northwest. Hopefully I'm not giving away too many of his secrets, and hopefully he's not in witness protection and I didn't give up too much of him. I doubt that, just because I know he's already on the internet and people have seen him, and he's a big name over at Microsoft, as I like to think. And so I will let Salvador say hello. Welcome, Salvador.
Hi, Joe, and hello to all your listeners. Yeah, I'm super happy and excited to be part of this episode of My Latinx Life, sharing a little bit of my, you know, experiences, my journey, and any tips and tricks that I can come up with. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we lucked out. Today is a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest. We're getting a beautiful week of weather. I can see the sun behind you, and I'm looking out of my window, and I can see the sunshine. So I will try not to take up too much of your time, so maybe you can get outside and enjoy some fresh air and some sunshine before it goes all the way for the day. But it's going to be a beautiful week. So yes, we'll go ahead and delve right on in today. So if somebody was to ask who Salvador is, how would you answer that question when somebody asks who is Salvador?
Wow, that's a great question. I wasn't expecting that one to get start us off with. You know, I am a very, you know, laid-back individual, but that is very driven, and, you know, with a big heart. I think that those were the things that I would come up with, right, when they ask me about myself. I always, you know, try to do what's right. I always, you know, lead with, you know, trying to understand, you know, people that I'm interfacing with, how I can help them, right? I, you know, Salvador in Spanish means savior. So, you know, they are telling me that, you know, sometimes my life mandate was given to me and you know, with my name. But I try to, you know, to do that, build relationships, strong relationships. I'm a true believer that, you know, by finding those things that, you know, overlap with each other, we can build, you know, long-lasting, you know, relationships that can translate into professional relationships, into, you know, normal, regular relationships. But, you know, trying to get to know people, establish those commonalities, and then build on top of that. That's always, you know, how I operate. And, you know, always assuming best intentions in people. That's how I approach, you know, life in general. Very happy about everything. My wife sometimes asks me, why are you always so happy? And my answer is, why not? I always try to be very positive and, you know, finding always a silver lining, Joe.
Great. And just so everybody knows, every time I've seen Salvador, he always has a smile. I can agree with his wife. Sometimes it is irritating. I'm like, okay, everything's not that great. Why are you so happy? And then I remind myself, it's good to have good people like that in your life. And we'll get a little more into how me and Salvador got to meet and kind of how we interact on a regular basis. Yes, Salvador is one of those people that always seems happy. Even if it's a facade, he's doing great at it, because I 100% buy into everything. He always seems very uplifting, and he 100% knows how to make perk people up even on a gray and dreary day.
It's hard for me to hide my passions and what I feel passionate about, and that what you're seeing is when we are talking, when we're interacting, Joe, the topics that we cover with a small group of people that we, you know, meet with bi-weekly. I feel super passionate about all the topics we cover, and that's the real me. That's who I am.
Yeah. How does Salvador identify? If somebody was to say, how do you identify in the world? How do you identify in your community? How do you identify at work and in your personal life? What are the terms? What are the words? How do you identify in the world?
Yeah, that's a good one, because, you know, I didn't grow up here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, you know, new to a lot of these labels, if you will, right? And, you know, I am originally from Mexico. And, you know, Mexico is not as diverse as you could imagine, right? I think that, you know, we don't have a lot of, you know, different cultures and ethnicities and whatnot. So these concepts are like foreign to me, were foreign to me when I came to the US.
Yeah.
But, you know, given, you know, all my journey and all my learnings, I identify myself as a Latinx IT professional who is a father, a dog lover, and an aspiring photographer. That's how I, you know, think about myself. The Latinx portion is a big one because, yeah, as I was saying before, it's one of my passions, is to help my community. A lot of people help me, you know, throughout my career, throughout my life journey. Mm-hmm. And all I can do is the same for the people who are coming behind, you know, generations and whatnot. So for every door that's been opened to me, I want to open 10. So, you know, with that Latinx, you know, label that we now are embracing, right, is helping our community to see themselves in a way that we see them, right, with the potential, with the passion, with the resourcefulness that we all have, very inherent to our culture.
Yeah. So that brings up a topic I'd love to ask you, and feel free not to answer or answer however you feel. There's no right or wrong answer on the show. So you use the word Latinx, a term that is primarily used in the United States and very much not used in many Latin American countries, mostly because the X is just not used as much as often. Some feel that it's also a bastardization of the Latin language and things like that. So you somewhat have used it. Do you feel like that is comfortable or something that you're still getting used to, or that you just feel like it's easy to adopt because of the culture here in the United States?
The way I see the Latinx term is an inclusive term, right? Because in Spanish, we have A and O to establish gender, right? And now, you know, there are people who may not have a gender to identify with, right? So to me, it's an inclusive way to identify us as a culture, right? Okay. Hispanic, you know, it implies that you speak Spanish, but then we're leaving out Brazilians, for instance, right?
Yep.
So that's why I feel Latinx is the one that I feel more comfortable with. And again, it takes time to get accustomed to. You're totally right. When I go to Mexico and I speak about these things and I mention Latinx, sometimes I get some like very interesting, you know, looks. And I explain, right? I try to elaborate a little bit more, try to educate, and also put it in context, you know, in the U.S. context, if you will.
Yeah.
And then resonates well with people, right? There's this whole movement of inclusivity, gender inclusivity in Mexico happening right now that sometimes goes, you know, to the extreme. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are evolving. We're trying to kind of refine it and then kind of find that perfect spot, right? Yep. But for the most part, I think that Latinx represents well, you know, our community here in the U.S. And we're trying to kind of extrapolate that outside of the country.
Okay, thank you. I always just like to get other people's views on that. That was not originally a part of the question. So thank you for indulging me today. So you said you work at Microsoft and I work for Seattle Children. So just a quick reminder for everybody, me and Salvador both work for our respective companies. We do not speak for the company, nor do we speak for the brands. We only speak for ourselves today. We just happen to both be employees, and that's how we have run into each other and interact. But yes, so if any of our legal teams happen to stumble across this, please know we do not.
Yeah, exactly. That's Microsoft is the place that I work for, and I love the company that I work for. But yeah, all my opinions and everything that I've been sharing here are personal opinions. Salvador speaking.
Yeah. So what do you do at Microsoft, and kind of what took you into this realm of working? Because you said you are a Latinx IT professional. What took you into this and what do you actually do there?
Yeah, so let's start with the second part of the question, and then we'll go into what is it I do at Microsoft right now. Since I was very little, I was a very active kid, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Very curious. I always wanted to see how things work. Mm-hmm. I was always attracted to technology. And it was through a TV show, and I'm going to date myself here, in the early 80s, that was called Whiz Kids. In Spanish, they translated it to Chicos Computarizados, right? Okay. Computer Kids. And it was basically this group of kids who were kind of playing with personal computers and hacking into systems. Of course, everything was totally, you know, out of reality. Yeah. But that got me interested, right? Video games also was a part of it because I was a huge Atari kid and trying to understand how things work and so on. So I basically developed a curiosity towards computers at a very early age. Again, we're talking about Mexico in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I was always nagging my mom that I wanted a computer, that I wanted a computer. And, you know, she basically is like, no, you know, that's a toy. It's super expensive and you're going to forget about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And no, no, no. And I was constantly nagging until one day she came home and she's like, okay, tell me about this computer that you want. How much is it? And when, and just let's talk about it. Right. So I was surprised. Of course, I gave her all the information. Mm-hmm. And but I asked her, what made you change your mind, right?
Yeah.
And she said, well, I was at the office and I was talking to the accountant of the office, telling them, telling him that that you were nagging me with this computer thing. And he said, hey, you know what? You should probably, you know, if you can buy it, you should, because who knows? In the future, mm-hmm. he might even make a living with this, right? So Mr. Accountant, wherever you are, thank you, because, you know, that changed my life, right? She got me my first computer, a Commodore VIC-20 with 20 kilobytes of memory, basic embedded. I didn't have a clue on programming, so I used to go to the libraries and the bookstores, basically just to copy all these programs, right? That's how I basically started with programming logic, right? With, you know, understanding loops, understanding conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So that's basically how I got into computers, very self-taught. There was no internet. And again, Mexico in the 80s, small town. It's not even Mexico City. I'm from a town called Jalapa in the state of Veracruz. So not a lot of resources. And that's how I developed that curiosity. I started to kind of figure out by myself with magazines and books. Then a small school opened in my city. A couple of years later, I started to take some classes to kind of learn formally, you know, computer programming. And the rest is history, right? I decided to pursue a degree in computer science.
Okay.
So I am a computer science engineer. I graduated from the top technology school in Mexico, which is El Tecnológico de Monterrey, Monterrey Tech. And basically, you know, that's how I started. And you know, it grew from there. Right after I graduated from college, I landed a job at a company called EDS, Electronic Data Systems. It was a consulting firm. Was actually founded by Ross Perot, and then it was sold to GM, and you know, a bunch of different things. But anyway, I was living in Mexico City, working for EDS in the financial sector as a consultant. One Sunday, I opened up a newspaper. They were asking for professional IT professionals to work in the U.S. I decided to give it a try. It was a headhunter firm. And, you know, long story short, they hired me, they brought me here, and I was placed at Microsoft as a vendor initially. Mm-hmm. And only a few weeks later, my manager at the time says, like, you know what, I have this full-time position. Would you like to apply for it? I did, and I got the job. And, you know, the rest is history. 21 years later, I'm here. Today, I am a director of business programs.
Okay.
And basically, it's a fancy title. My organization is a change management organization, basically helps the field with all the solutions that we create. When I talk about the field, is the employees that are outside of the corporate headquarters, mm-hmm. who are mainly sales-oriented people.
Yeah.
So we create solutions internally to facilitate their lives, right? On sales tools, marketing tools. And then, of course, there are also employees, so HR and finance tools as well. Mm-hmm. So we basically do all the readiness, training, landing of solutions, post-launch support, etc., right? So my team is basically a change management organization that helps, you know, our workforce to have an easier life.
Thanks. So you said that you've kind of, this is a great path. It's not linear. It kind of, you said it's taken its ups and downs and taken you, you've moved from one country to another country because of it. Do you say that there would be lots of people who look like you? Would you say that there's lots of Latino and Latinx people or BIPOC people in your field and in your work?
More recently, yes. Before, no. I seen a change. I seen a trend. I think that there's a lot of companies like Microsoft making truly an effort to capture and attract that talent from those untapped, you know, countries or regions or areas of the world, right? I seen a change from 21 years ago to now. I see more people that look like myself, mm-hmm. not only in the company, but also in prominent positions within the company. There's still more progress to be made, but I think that the progress that we have made is being great. rate. Now, I don't think that it's just the responsibility of the companies. I think that there's also more opportunities for people like myself to kind of pursue STEM degrees. Yeah. But we're not there yet. There's still more to be done. I think that the pipeline can be richer. And that's why I do all the work with school districts and the community that I do, Joe, is to make sure that people can see this as an alternative that can change their lives, that they can see themselves reflected in me a little bit, right? Somebody that looks like them, that has an accent, that has an interesting story coming from a different country, et cetera, et cetera. Meaning that, you know, if you put the work, if you put the effort, you can definitely attain to working at companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple and whatnot, right? So in a nutshell, yes, I think that we are making a good progress. There's still more progress to be made, but there's more people that look like me than before. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So you've already started alluding to it about giving back. That is a huge part of what you do and kind of how we've met. So Salvador, as he's alluded to, he joins us in our biweekly conversation. I've talked about it. Pilar was part of those conversations. She was my first guest. And we have it set up to have some of the other people that are in that call as well to also be guests on this call, which is us giving back to the community. And that is a huge part of what I know you to be, is your desire. Like you said, you have this passion to give back and make sure that you're giving back to the community that you serve, not just here and not within your work, but you also do work outside of back in Mexico and things like that. So we're going to start at the closest level. So you happen to work at Microsoft. What do you do in that role of giving back and things like that? I'm alluding to your work within y'all's Ola Inclusion or your Ola.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am the co-lead for the Ola ERG, the employee resource group that basically encompasses all the Hispanics in my division. And, you know, the immediate work that I do is to enable our community within Microsoft. We do a lot of training sessions, right? We talk about imposter syndrome. We talk about executive presence. We talk about how to navigate the corporate landscape as a Latinx, how to, you know, basically bring our idiosyncrasies into the company in a positive, constructive way, right? Yeah. Kind of leveraging those strengths that we have as a community. I do a lot of that. Side by side is a lot of recruiting efforts. Identify talent, make sure that we are, you know, helping those individuals to understand the interviewing process, to understand the corporate culture in Microsoft, so we can actually, you know, help them aspire and apply for jobs that potentially without our help and our information, they wouldn't go for because they may think that they are not capable or they don't have the necessary skills and whatnot. And we always try to tell them, you know, you don't have to check all the boxes. A lot of stuff, it's the decisions are made on potential and appetite and hunger to actually do the right thing and excel and whatnot, right? So, you know, when I think about giving back, that's the most tangible way. Then, you know, Microsoft also has a pro bono practice. These lawyers, Microsoft lawyers, I collaborate on a couple of fronts with them. One, it's on an organization called KIND, Kids in Need of Defense. And these are the kids who travel along, mostly from Central America, running away from violence and drug, you know, and gangs and all that stuff. And they basically get detained in the U.S. and they're in the process of being deported, sadly, back to their countries to where they need to kind of continue to face these challenges. Mm-hmm. So what KIND does is provides them with legal representation to make a case for asylum. And so they can stay here legally and they can be absorbed by our foster care system and become productive members of society. I am not a lawyer, but I work with them as an interpreter, right? So cases are assigned to us, and then we kind of go from beginning to end, making sure that the lawyers have all the information, that we make connections with their families back in their countries of origin, building the case. And, you know, it's a very successful organization because most of the cases that we take on are actually with a positive outcome, meaning that the kids stay here and can continue their asylum process, you know, in freedom and hopefully aspiring to get that legal permanent residency in the U.S. That's one. The other one is the DILI project, and this is a family separation project. Similar to KIND, Microsoft supports, you know, with pro bono practice. What we did, it's going to be almost 2 years now ago, we went to the south of Texas, a town called DILI, which is 100 miles south of San Antonio, where there is a detention camp. where women are detained, separated from their families in some instances, you know, on their really bad conditions, right? They don't speak the language. They don't have anybody who tells them, welcome, we're here to help you, which is basically what we did, and represent them. Yeah. So for a week, we did that. And on that instance, Joe, we were able to free up 90 women from that jail. I cannot call it a different thing. It was a jail. And to me, you know, I went in with a lot of judgment, to be honest, mm-hmm. because I'm like, what are they thinking, right? But believe me, after 2 hours of being there, listening to their stories and translating those stories to the lawyers, I totally changed. And I'm like, I would have done that in a heartbeat, right? You know, to save my life, to save my kids' life, et cetera, right? So it transformed me very much so. Right. I always say nothing I've done in my life has been as impactful than that week that I spent in Dili with 16 Microsoft lawyers helping these people. Right? So that's a little bit of the giving back within Microsoft that I do, Joe.
Yeah. So you kind of alluded to that. Your immigrant process was very different than the ones that you were working with and how that changed you. Do you feel like you meet other people who immigrated very similar to you and had the job security and were able to move here for a job, kind of have that similar view sometimes, and they kind of forget that not everybody had that opportunity, and that sometimes it takes a little piece of giving back to your community that helps change that?
That's the other thing that I try to do. It's always bring that reality to the picture with people like myself, right? Who actually got it, you know, we got it really easy, right? We mm-hmm. were hired back in our countries. We came probably with very little money, but at least with a job, right? And some certainty. Whereas there's the majority of us here are not that way, right? They come really chasing that dream, trying to cross the border illegally multiple times, suffering from violence, from you name it, right? And I think that, you know, I try to remind us constantly that that's a set of the population that we need to pay attention to, right? Yeah. That's a set of the population that don't have the resources, that don't speak the language. And we need to actually, you know, emphasize those individuals as, you know, people who need our help and our contributions. And that's connected to the work that I do outside of Microsoft.
Yeah.
Working with the school districts, both Bellevue School District and Lake Washington School District, basically trying to educate Hispanic families to understand the American school system, to understand grading, to understand graduation, requirements, college applications, scholarship applications. We do panels with, you know, Hispanic professionals, with dreamers. Actually, we had one panel with a dreamer that now works for the school district as a professor, as a teacher.
Yeah.
And again, the intention is two things, right? Is to raise awareness with these families, but also to say, we hear you, we see you, we stand next to you, right?
Yeah.
Because that to me is the most powerful thing we can do as a community. Once you reach certain level of comfort or prominence or whatever, right? Do not forget about those, right? Individuals who need your help, who need your attention. So you know, that's how I'm trying to, you know, continue to give back that way. And Joe, this is something that was ingrained in my head since I was very little by my mother, right? My mom is a huge influence in my life. And I probably mentioned this to you before in one of our meetings, right? But my mom used to tell me constantly, if we don't share what we have nothing.
Yeah.
And with that, that's how I tried to conduct myself, right? With that teaching, because she was such a selfless woman. She passed away a few years ago, that, you know, it's also a way to honor her memory, right? And to, you know, to send that signal to wherever she is, you did well, you know, I'm following on your steps and hopefully making you proud, you know, wherever you are.
Well, I can say that I'm sure she's looking back at down at you or up at you or aside from you, whatever you believe in the universe. I will say she is looking at you and saying you're doing great. And I think that's very true. And I think that, I mean, I even mentioned it, you know, even though like me and my dad don't always get along, one of the things that I do know that he instilled in me is that like whatever we have to give back, because he did. He grew up, he did not grow up wealthy or anything. Like he had to fight for everything and that kind of led him to the way he is and things like that. And that's fine. But one of the things that he never let us forget is that like we did not move from the neighborhood that he grew up in. Like we live there and my parents could have very well moved to a different neighborhood and we could have probably been in a better school district and things like that. But it was important to my dad that we didn't move. And that was something that always stuck in our head is that we were never allowed to make fun of other people because they had less than us, because we were just fortunate enough to, and we had to share everything. Like, there was never a time that something was just mine. As much as I like think back on it, like everything was mine plus all my cousins and all my friends who wanted it also. Like, if they wanted it, we had to give it to them. It was never this idea that it belonged to us. We just got to be the custodians of it until somebody else got to have it. So
one of the last times my mother visited me here in Seattle, it was during Christmas, and we were downtown Seattle. We were walking down Pine, and basically she went to do some shopping and whatnot. So we went into the Gap, the Gap store that is right there across the street from Nordstrom. And then all of a sudden I didn't see her. And then she comes back into the store from the outside. She was wearing a very nice long coat with like a little, you know, fur on the collar and all that stuff. And she wasn't wearing it anymore. And I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, no, let's find a jacket for me. And what happened to your coat? She's like, well, there was a guy outside that was freezing, right? And it was barefoot. So I basically just took it off and gave it to him. Right? So that you know, that tells you who she was. And there's no way I could be any different, right? Yeah. Based on that example, right? And, you know, at the end of the day, she made a difference to one person, and to her, that's what really mattered.
Yeah. So you give back and you work with the school districts. What other, do you do other work here in the community in the area that we should be aware of, that we should just all be in awe of all the great things that Salvador's doing here to help save the world?
The other thing that I wanted to mention, I'm part of the board of directors of two organizations, both nonprofits. One is called HITECH, Hispanic Technology Executive Council. I am part of the corporate advisory board for HITECH, representing Microsoft. And this is a great organization of Hispanic, Latinx IT professionals across the country, where their motto is push up, pull up, right? And it's basically continue to grow and continue to pull up the people who are behind you, right? We do summits 3 times a year where we come together. Of course, this last year has been all virtual. We call ourselves La Gran Familia, and basically connections with CEOs, CFOs, CTOs, vice presidents, all Latinx people, different industries, banking, IT, of course, you know, oil, you name it. So it's a great way to connect and then to join forces to continue to amplify our presence and our impact as a community, right? So that's one of them. The other one, I'm also a board member for Omega Op. Omega Op is a platform created by a few kids here in the Seattle area, all from Mexico. And it's a platform that basically enables kids to learn to code. Everything is in Spanish.
Okay.
Right? And it's kind of crowdsourced in the sense that people submit problems and then you submit the answers and there's competitions. The platform has been so successful that now it's being used by the Informatics Olympics in Mexico. And we're trying to expand to other countries. But the beauty of this platform and the mission that we have, Joe, is twofold. It's one, to reach to those communities in Mexico that don't get the resources and the attention that they need, where there's a lot of, you know, untapped talent, right?
Yep. Yep.
So we go to small schools, small universities, small communities, right? Try to convince the professors and the teachers to kind of use the platform and see the benefits. And we actually have grown a lot because of that. But the second aspect of our mission is to continue to foster IT as an option for girls. We see a big dip, you know, from middle school to high school. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, middle school, you still see 50-50.
Yeah.
When it goes to high school, it drops dramatically. Yep. Right, the gender balance. Yep. There is a lot of, you know, cultural things, right? Hey, why do you go to school if you're going to get married, right? It's just a waste of time and blah, blah, blah. So no, we're trying to make sure that the message echoes and resonates with families, right? And making sure that these girls have a career, a profession that can make them self-sufficient.
Yeah.
I have a daughter, I have a 19-year-old daughter, and I always say, you know, my dream is that you are going to be self-sufficient. So in the future, if you decide to be with somebody, it's because you want to and not because you don't have a choice, right? And having an independence from a career perspective is going to give you that. So that's kind of like the message I'm trying to always, you know, share with the families and ensure that they pay attention to their daughters as much as they pay attention to their kids. Now, Joe, you being Hispanic, you know that that's tough. It's hard, right? There's a lot of ingrained, you know, preconceived notions, but we need to continue to push the envelope. We need to continue to let these families know, you know, you need to support your daughter the same way, because at the end of the day, these are the things that she can aspire, that she can do, that she can achieve, right? And that's the other thing that I do as well outside of Microsoft.
Remember, follow us on Instagram and Twitter for updates on the show, and like and share with your friends, with your families, with your coworkers, because we love to have people here listening, and leave us a good rating on whatever platform you're listening on today. Thanks.